There's over 200 hours of Star Wars on film. This is a Star Wars binge where we select, edit, and order the best of the Star Wars canon and talk about all the new properties. My name is Jeff Cook. I'm in Denver, Colorado. No, I'm not. I'm in Greeley, Colorado. With me is Daniel Mothershed.
I'm in Denver.
Playwright, artist, general champion of all things progressive pop culture.
Heck
and,
yeah.
Daniel's in Denver.
This is true. All of those things are true. This is this, and also this is my location, and this is the sound of my voice.
Talking Acolyte. We're in the middle, and the middle just got violent.
Yeah, it did.
What was not quite expecting where we were going to go. I have all sorts of theories about where we're headed now. This for me, we're talking about episodes 4 and 5 with some references backwards, but. I was like, oh, I see what story they're telling. That was how I came out of this episode. But I thought this was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Lots of great lightsaber action. Lots of Jedi, Sith, you know, dynamics and lore and rhymes coming into play. And I think if you don't take this series too seriously, I just love the hell out of it.
Yeah, I think if you take it. The thing I keep coming back to is that this really is, even in its more serious moments, Star Wars is a property for young people and kids. George Lucas has said mm-hmm. that. Everybody has said that. And the only people who disagree are people who take themselves too seriously on the internet. Because when you love something, you know more about it than the people that created it. That's just internet logic. But
It's 48-year-olds like me. It's way
except not you, because you don't do that.
I fully agree. There is the thing about this series as a whole is I keep thinking they are aiming at, and I think hitting quite well, that Harry Potter, you know, middle school to high school person. Like, that's who they are trying to make a show for, which. If you can just jump in saying this is what this is, as you were saying, this is for young people. I think these are great.
And I think even into people in their 20s, maybe even early 30s, that's been the big thing. The other, mm-hmm. To earn my champion of progressive science fiction badge, the other series that I've been deeply invested and in love with is this reboot of Doctor Who, and that's kind of mm-hmm. the audience that they've really been getting for that one as well. Late teens through early 30s, people who had kind of checked out from some of that stuff, really engaging because they like the story they're telling and the characters that they're creating, and which is great. And also it appeals to me, somebody in their mid 30s. So
yeah. There is, we kind of mentioned it last time, but there's a Dark Knight problem here. That the Dark Knight is so good, it's very difficult for other superhero movies to compete. And the further we get away from it, Andor was so good, it may be difficult for other shows coming out to be at that level.
And I like that this one, I don't think they're speaking very authoritatively on something there's no earthly way I can know. However, it doesn't seem like they're trying to just replicate Andor's success in the way that Book of Boba Fett, or even to a degree, I felt like Kenobi was trying to duplicate the success of The Mandalorian. It feels like the woman who created the show and the people who are writing it feel like this is them really being like, we are telling our own Star Wars story. And I think that's so smart.
I agree. And I think that's the right move. Like, not everything should be Andor. I think that's exactly right. They are telling a great standalone story in a new part of the universe, which a lot of us have been longing for.
Yeah.
New time period, that is. And yeah, it's hitting the beats they need to hit. It's a lot of great, compelling characters, most of which are no longer with us.
I was going to say, oh, okay.
Oh, I was cheering for that guy. Okay.
Well. Not anymore. One less name to learn.
That's right. Actually, I got to the podcast notes and I'm just like, okay, what was everybody's name? Because we need to give them a send-off. You got to read the list of the dead here.
Yeah, I did a Google search this morning as well, where I was like, okay, Is it Jackie? Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah. My, of all things, I feel like I'm being complaining and I shouldn't be. I think the visuals really elevated here. Maybe it's more when, once they get away from some of the, you know, spaceships and stuff, the, I mean, lightsaber wise, this was fantastic. This was some high level,
yeah,
Ahsoka looking, you know, Star Wars on film goodness.
Well, I love the way they're choosing to shoot the lightsaber fight duels now to with the actual tubes with actual light in them, so you do get those real contrasts and colors on the actors' faces, and anytime you shoot them in close up, I think they it just looks gorgeous.
Yep. Agreed. My only complaint was some of the clunky exposition. Aside from that, I think everything's moving. I suppose we may talk about May and Nashoah's relationship. Mm-hmm. That comes across a little cardboard for me.
Oh, interesting.
But like all the secondary characters, I think are just winning. Especially Saul. I think Saul is a fantastic character who they are clearly putting forth. Here's the good. Qui-Gon face of a Jedi, and he's not Qui-Gon. I think that's the heart of this show, and I suppose we can talk about this. And it's hinted to a handful of times by what's the villain's name?
Somebody called him Smilo Ren on the internet, and that's all I can think of now.
Darth Deltz,
right? Exactly. All I ever think of is Jason Mendoza, because he's in a good place. But.
Yeah, what's his name? Kamir is what his name is. These are things that, some of the stuff that Kamir says to Saul really hint at Saul having made a handful of really bad choices. That's not Qui-Gon's story. So here would be the difference then, I suppose. It seems to me, I think you're right. Qui-Gon is making choices that conform with his ideals and his view of what's right and wrong against the Jedi Council. I don't think that's how Saul works. Saul has made some very bad choices and now is seeking to make other people think that he is upright and good. And that's where, you know, Kymir is just piercing through that. And I mean, saying some things directly, Kymir looks at him. Saul asks Kymir, what master hides his face from his pupil? And Kymir says, you tell me. You know, it's just over and again, the beat is, I mean, I think this is where they're going. And maybe we can talk about this later, but yeah. I think that Saul has a dark backstory.
But I also think there's a little bit of that with Qui-Gon and Anakin, too, when he's really little. Like, he's absolutely not telling that little boy the 100% truth.
Fair.
I'm really not disagreeing with you, because I totally agree about Saul. But I think there's some dishonesty and some value choices being made by both of those men. I'm wondering if maybe it's just the degree to which there are consequences and mistakes.
Maybe there is a through line perhaps with them both, with, I assume you'd agree that a lot of times large institutions, especially religious institutions, there's the murky stuff, you know, behind the doors, but we have to put forward a face that communicates stability, trustworthiness. I got no dirt on my, you know, clothes kind of. And I think you're right there. Like Qui-Gon and Saul would both be in that space.
Yeah. And done, I think, really well on both accounts. So both two great actors and two great characters.
Yeah. And maybe that's some of the quality of this project, is they're not just copying and pasting Qui-Gon into this role. They create a new Jedi Master who has his own issues, his own ambitions and motives, has his own, you know, shortcomings, and you know, it's not just, oh, we should really redo Qui-Gon again.
What if you got more
so
time?
Too, the Sith here. Yeah, right. And so too the Sith. I think, or he doesn't identify himself as a Sith, but the Kymir as a dark force user, a Dark Side Force user, feels new mm-hmm. to me.
Yeah,
he's not Ventress, and he's not. I mean, I couldn't pair him with another character.
No, I like that. Like that, he almost calls out that black and white hat, black hat.
Yep.
Understanding of the Force when he is talking to Soul, he has that line too, where it's like, "Well, I guess you'd say I'm this,"
yep.
Which I also think is so interesting, and I know there's discourse on the internet of people hating it, but I love that this show is really like two specific Jedi characters, and then kind of in general holding up a mirror and being like, despite what you're saying, like here's how you live in this very black and white of moral superiority you're all claiming all the time. Maybe it's not actually good. Like when he killed to just jump, but like when he kills Jackie and Solo's like, "How dare you? She was a child," and he just kind of goes, "You brought her here." And I'm just like, yeah, man, maybe you shouldn't be using child soldier.
That's exactly what I thought. And I think that's it. And that's the right interpretation there. It's like, you do realize not only did you bring in a child soldier, you kidnapped this girl, indoctrinated this girl, placed her in harm's way. I don't think that I'm the one who's culpable here, even though I'm the one holding the blade.
Yeah.
I suppose he would be culpable in some sense, but
right. Well, no, he
can't stab he somebody did three
but,
times.
But at the same time, it is like, you know, kind of saying like that idea that two things can be true of like, yeah, this is a fight. This is a battle that you've engaged me in. It's not my fault you chose to make a child participate in it.
Yeah, that's it. Two things that hit me there was first on the black and white side of this, Chimera himself doesn't want to be categorized was what I read. Like his primary line, I think, in the show was, you know, what do you want? I want freedom. And freedom from your categories. You might call me a Sith, but the, you know, the uniqueness, I think he's self-possessedly a unique character who is doing his own thing.
I agree.
And if you want to do the black hat, white hat thing, that's your business. That's not who I am. And it's also the case, I think, moving forward, I think that Chimera's going to weaponize that. He's going to weaponize the black and white categories and going to do some real mind fuckery with with the show.
Yes, I agree.
Using the Jedi's categories. And this is the same thing. I mean, we see this in Return of the Jedi with Luke. Luke has bought into the black hat, white hat ways. And so when he has his conversation with Obi-Wan, it's, hey, I think that you're lying to me here.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan is lying to him. He even lies to him again. I think even in Return of the Jedi, I still think that Obi-Wan is trying to kind of maneuver his way out of this conundrum. And maybe that's where the screenwriters were left. But on film, it's like, yeah, I don't think you're, I still don't think you're telling the truth, boss.
And it feels very much just to, we said in, but I think last time and certainly this time we talked about how in religious institutions sometimes there are the different moves to different things. That scene in Return of the Jedi feels very much like that to me. Like Obi-Wan Kenobi is dead and he's still kind of protecting he's still a company man. You know, I think I've said that a bunch about him on this podcast, but there's still that like, hey, you lied to me. Okay, well, I told you this and it's really this, but like from... I mean, I'm going to use the actual line because it's a great line. So what I told you is true from a certain point of view.
Come clean, man.
Yeah. Come on, dude. Bullshit. We know.
And notice how that gets a Jedi in trouble from time to time. Might even lead to, I mean, and there it is. Religious institutions that are backfilling and trying to cover up. That's what it is. Is you're seeking to cover up the gross nastiness and just not being authentic about, look, here's our failures. Here's our successes. They could always make the case. This is, I mean, how relevant to present day.
Did something happen?
This is the best. This is what we have to offer, and it's probably the best on the table right now. It's not perfect.
Yes.
So I'm sorry that it's not perfect, that human beings can't be perfect. I realize that all of us want that and for our ideals to be met by the person who represents 400 million people, or in this case, you know, the thousands of what is it, star systems.
Yeah.
May not happen.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, we all want something better, but we don't have that, so we got to fix this thing we have until we can make something else.
Yeah. But honesty... I would much prefer honesty. And actually, notice Chimere is weaponizing honesty. It's like, right, like, here's the truth.
Yeah, like all good Chimere, villains.
Chimere is actually what playing it straight is. What's the phrase? He tells it how it is. You know.
I like him because he tells the truth.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it. But does he? Anyway.
From a certain point of view.
Actually, I suppose he hasn't lied, has he not? That's one of the things about great villains is often great villains don't lie.
Yeah.
They're coming in, they're saying, look, let me show you the hypocrisy in your system. Anyway, what else do you like about this episode?
Part of me wants to be snarky, especially after episode 4, and say I like that something happened, but because I thought episode 3 they set up quite a lot of stuff, and then suddenly we get episode 4, and it really is 30 minutes of some travel, and you see right. Master Kalnaka, who is a Wookiee Jedi, who I think they had so much potential to do awesome stuff with, and then it's like oh he's gone. Okay, well, you were in a lot of the posters, but all right.
It was another... I wasn't anticipating that move. I thought that was great. It was, again, one of those, oh, this isn't the show I thought I was watching.
They had... I kind of wish that we had gotten to see his death, and I don't mean that in a, like, I wanted to watch him die. I just mean, you know, with Carrie Ann Moss's character, we get this great fight with young... youngest Lannister floating at the sort of
sure
that, and then a Wookiee Jedi, which we've never seen, and he looked so cool and could be so awesome. It was like, and exit pursued by Wookiee dead off stage or off right. off screen.
They could have done more of a, not a jump scare, but like there are lots of movies. One of my favorite scenes is in the Phantom, what is it, Mask of the Phantasm, the Batman.
Oh God, I love that. Yeah,
show. There's a character who has died, but you don't know he's died. And like when the body is revealed, like the chair is turned, and then you see this person who has been killed. And there's all sorts of other things going on. It's one of the best Batman scenes ever.
It's, yeah.
But or at least Joker scenes. Like that sort of thing. Like you turn the chair and the Wookiee has been stabbed, and you're like, whoa, didn't expect this.
So I just think there are better ways they could have done it. So then moving, I was not hesitant, but moving into this episode, I did think, all right, I wonder what this is going to be. Because we did get that brief face-off at the end of episode 4, which I thought was fabulous, where they are facing off against Chimere, and he does throw everybody back.
Yep.
Just like, I don't feel like we've seen that before with Force users, and that's really fascinating. So leading into this one, I really just like, I'd love to see a cool fight, and that's what we got.
Yep.
And I love
four and five on this front. It feels like a single, you know, 2-part episode.
Yeah, like you should watch them together. They should have released them together.
Yeah,
I think. What do I know? Yeah. It's still fine, but I liked this episode, and I kind of already alluded to it, but I love how this series is sort of questioning everything we know about the Jedi, and sort of kicking at the pillars to see what stands, and I think that's so great, and I also the part of me that likes to watch a fight in real life. And also in the show, but I just love that this is kind of making people angry that this stuff is being questioned. I'm like, man, this is stuff we've all thought, most of us have thought as we've watched the show. It's like, why are you policing the world? Why are you using children as soldiers? Why are you indoctrinating people? And I just love that this show is taking that head on. And I think we said it before, but it's you know... The generation before us loved all that stuff, and then our generation, you know, of whatever, as people who kind of deconstructs and likes to evaluate why institutions are the way that they are,
mm-hmm.
of course, these are the people that are making Star Wars now. And I think, why not? And I think that's fascinating and fabulous. And I just love how they're doing it.
The critics are, on this front, are suffering from the exact thing that the show is showing, mm-hmm. that black hat, white hat thinking is probably detrimental. And that there does need to be more honesty, nuance, challenging of authority, and yet embracing the healthiest elements of what's real, you know? And so, like, and just to rewind a little bit, this is precisely how Ahsoka's journey goes. There's so much Ahsoka in this that's never said, but it's very much like this is the healthy through line mm-hmm. of somebody who's raised in it, learns it, deconstructs, yet doesn't fall to darkness and to, you know, self-destruction.
Yeah.
She ends up doing that through line where she embraces the healthiest elements of her past, honors them, discards the trash, and emerges a really healthy person. I think you're right in saying that the critics are on that, on this front, they want something to believe in. And I suppose there's nothing wrong with that. But at some point, people fail you. Like institutions fail you, and there does need to be an honest conversation all the time about, because we're a communal species, we're a tribal group creating social species, and
yeah,
there's a dynamic there. There's a tension there,
and it doesn't mean that the things that you love are bad. You know, when an institution does let you down, when somebody you've looked up to or even a good friend lets you down, that doesn't mean you have to be like, "Well, shit, I guess I'm not friends with that person anymore because they disappointed me." It's like,
yeah.
No, you're friends with a human being, and you've let them down. And guess what?
Yep,
you either definitely have, or you absolutely will do the same to them, and they're probably not going to be like, "Well, see you later."
Yep.
Yeah, it's just the big thing I thought, talk about criticism of the last couple episodes, the people who are like, well, it's so inconsistent. The characters are just like this, and then they're that, and then they do whatever. And I think, okay, well, first of all, human beings are extremely inconsistent from day to day, from moment to moment, to beat to beat. But the thing I heard was, well, May is in with this thing, and then just for no reason at all, she suddenly changes her mind, and it's inconsistent when she finds out her sister is alive. Suddenly, her biggest and most important thing is finding her sister. I'm like, that is not inconsistent.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think their motives are pretty clear.
Also, this goddamn series does that all the time, where it's like, well, the move was too fast. Oh, you mean like a really, really fast move where, say, you know, May's a young woman in her 20s, so, you know, maybe he hasn't had as much time to do that, as opposed to a very old man who is embittered and made his whole life about killing people, who finds out his son is still alive, and his son looks at him and goes, you know what, I don't think you're a bad guy. And then 10 minutes later, he's like, you know what, you're right, I'm not. I'm going to throw this dude down a shaft.
or just the primary through line of Empire. I want to become a Jedi Knight like my father, until it's the case that my friends are in peril. Right? And then you have to make a decision.
Like, stop making this thing into something it never was.
Maybe you have no love for your siblings. That's which is fine. But like, I think that would be if I'm made to make a decision about the welfare of people I care about versus, you know, X ambition I have. That makes sense.
Because it's still the same goals. They just shift. Like, because May clearly wants to have control of her own life. She wants to avenge/revenge the things that have happened to her in her life for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
Including but not limited to the loss of her sister. Now she finds her sister is there, and I would argue that her goals, and we see them in this episode, I think are still very much the same: to avenge and revenge and get justice for the things that have happened to her, which now potentially could for her include doing that with her sister.
Agreed. We can jump past some of the other stuff. I would love to, let's talk about May and Nishoa here.
Yeah, the Prince and the Prince and the Pauper ending that they gave us.
I was reading Parent Trap into this. I find this incredibly clever. Here was my read on it. Chimere doesn't believe in May. She actually isn't manipulatable enough. She may not even be powerful enough. She hasn't had Jedi training, but Ashoa has.
Yeah.
I think he thinks that Ashoa is more powerful. And here's a great, you know, prequel angle on this, that Chimere has never been thinking May is going to be my apprentice. May is Dooku. Mm. May is the character that he wants to set aside because he has a bigger fish he wants to catch, and the bigger fish is Ashoa.
There's always a bigger fish.
And there is always a bigger fish. I don't think I ever read that into this, Anakin's the bigger fish. Anyway, that he knows that he has that information about Soul, and he's going to use that to turn the heart of this woman. Just jumping forward, I kept thinking, like, where are they landing this? Like, we need to wrap this sucker up. I have no idea how they're going to land this. And the answer is, they're not going to land this.
Right.
This is season one.
Well, yeah, the woman who created the show said she'd love, like, a four-season arc. Which, give it to her. Give it to her.
Yep. No, I think this, especially if the budget works, you get viewership, it's working great. Yeah, this show lands with Ashoa really turning. And I imagine with May having a fish out of water experience, she's now surrounded by Jedi. And let's see how that goes.
Well, and clearly she chooses to do that.
She does. I think her ambition was to be a sleeper agent, or, you know, like a spy infiltrating, and I assume that it's black is going to turn white, white's going to turn black. That's what I assumed they're setting up here.
Yeah, I don't have any real predictions, honestly, about what they're setting up, other than obviously she has some ulterior motive, and there's part of me that wants, you know, they've sort of let us think Chimere is the bad guy, and maybe he obviously is a villain, but there is part of me that wonders if it is going to end up being May. I'm not saying she's the secret bad guy, but if it does pivot to her wrecking shop in a way that we're not expecting.
That could be. I mean, you have two sisters who are doing damage. I would assume, so here's, if I was playing this out as a screenwriter, May is going to choose with her own freedom to embrace the Jedi way.
Mm.
She has been antagonistic the entire time, and yet I could see her being converted by her own free choices. Very unlike her sister. Well, her sister had free choices, but very unlike, you know, a lot of the Padawans. And I think you know, Ashoa is the acolyte in this show. We didn't know that.
Oh, sure.
But Ashoa's it's the same way Grogu is actually the Mandalorian.
Right.
But we don't know that yet.
Right.
I like that. I mean, it's super clever.
That's what made me think Prince and the Pauper, just the idea that, like, oh, we look bizarrely similar. Let us trade clothes and see what comes of it.
Yes.
Except
you brought up Shakespeare last time. I mean, there's a rhythm. Whenever you bring in twins, there's three stories, you know.
There's always mischief when there are twins involved.
Right. Wait a second. He's a magician who's a twin.
Ooh.
That's how he's pulling off that trick. One other thing that's coming up a lot with May and Ashoa is the idea, and this is contemporary, is the idea of grooming children for your purposes. Now, we brought this up last time that, you know, you're kidnapping very powerful kids, training them up in a way so that they become, you know, your military. The values, there's something about, like, being a good parent, you need to instill values, as it were, in your children.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, I think Chimere's pushing into this, that honoring their freedom and volition in their own sense of self, this is likewise incredibly important. And so, like, how do you navigate that, especially in a world like ours, where, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of folks in our culture who think that they can breed their way back into, you know, power and relevance. If I just take my kids out of your school system and have 15 of them, then we'll have voting power, you know, something of that sort. If voting power will even work by that point in time.
No, it won't. But yeah.
It feels like that theme is here. I'm talking a lot. I apologize.
No. I think it's really interesting. I don't have anything actually to worthwhile to contribute to that other than to just say, I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the battle. The battle was very well done. I'm sure I've heard that from the director that this was her favorite episode, and there's so much of the high point of this is what they're doing here. I was thrilled that it's made for a younger audience, and yet they're allowing the dark things to be here and having the death of young people, of Yord and Jaqi in particular, who they build up to be, here are our new characters. You know, it's what they should, you know, to critique some stuff, they should have been killing off characters in the sequel trilogy who were principal. They should have killed Han Solo in Return of the Jedi, in my opinion. The stakes, you know, it's Game of Thrones obviously knows this and uses it to great effect, of creating stakes and buy-in and emotion from the audience of how angry you are that person X was killed.
Yeah,
at that wedding.
And I don't know that. Yeah, my God. I don't know that I was angry at any of the deaths in this one, because I hadn't quite had the time to invest in the characters. I was shocked and surprised because I was starting to, particularly Jackie's character. She's just so charming and fun and has so much personality. But yeah, it's a good move, just as you said, from a storytelling standpoint. And I like, it just is such great commentary on, like, these were two young people with so much to offer, and just what a senseless waste of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in so many different ways, that's now, right? Soldiers. Whether it's war, whether it's whatever, it's just like, what? These are just useless expenditures of people who could give and had so much.
I just rewinding the tape, just snapping Yord's neck and leaving him dead. That works for that character. And it's like, oh, is this what we're going to do? All right. And with... I suppose I get you with Jaqi, where it's like, we didn't spend enough time with them to really care for them in that way. But my experience was watching her fight. You're just like, oh yeah, oh, this is somebody I can cheer for. I'm on Team Jaqi. Bang, bang, bang. She gets three in the chest.
Yeah. Well, and we didn't get the time with her. And I'm not saying that as a critique, because with some characters that you die and you're like, God, we had so much time with them. I'm so sad. With this character, it was, we hadn't had that much time with you, and I was looking forward to spending that time with you. Oh, damn. And now we can't.
Right. Exactly right. And that makes, I think that at least emotionally... makes the piece captivating.
Oh, yeah, it's a great move. I was thrilled.
We're not telling the same story.
Yeah, I was so thrilled. Yeah, Star Wars should have been doing this for a long time. Marvel should have been doing this for a long time. It's like, yeah, man, come on, like, kill some people. I mean, it's a weird thing to say.
I could be wrong. There may be more Jedi that are killed in this one episode than in all of the Clone Wars. Like, I don't recall in Clone Wars that many Jedi dying. There are some, sure, like Ventress's, master. There are the two Jedi at the end, when they're showing how Order 66 works, and I've already forgotten the character's name who goes rogue and kills the two Jedi. But anyway, Jedi just don't die.
We've seen eight
often.
Die in this show.
Okay, right. I can think of three off the top of my head. I mean, who else dies? The Sifo-Dyas dies. There just aren't that many in Clone Wars. In all of Clone Wars.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, the only time you see more of them die is in Revenge of the Sith, and that's done just like zip, zip, zip.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit, to be perfectly honest? Like,
Anakin hacking apart Scottish kids. I mean, but that's what this scene had kind of in my mind. It's an Anakin, you know.
Yeah.
Slaughter kind of scene. But these are, I suppose, these aren't Scottish kids. These are some at least teenage, or even like young adult looking people. It feels like, I mean, I don't know if this is the right, I have like a Tarantino Reservoir Dogs thing in my head where it's like, here's the young police officers who show up and then get gunned down by the person who has been around the block for 10 years.
Sure, yeah.
And those guys were idealistic and just got taken down during the heist. That's right. Yeah,
they got inducted. They got groomed and inducted into a thing, and it killed them.
Yeah, you're idealistic, but there's bigger things going on, and you're a foot soldier.
Yeah,
that's real to life. And
yeah, these young Jedi almost have a Star Trek red shirt ensign feel to them, where it's like, all right, let's send all these 15-year-olds into battle while all of us old guys stay on the bridge and watch them. Or sort of a,
yep,
perhaps a, if you want to be more sad and aggressive, a American military complex feel to them. Let's send all these kids in, and all of us old men will stand at a bank of computers and order them into battle.
It's good to bring Vietnam back into these stories, you know? Iraq and Afghanistan, obviously, have colored a lot of Star Wars as well, and those themes still hold. Might be a warning for, you know, we continue to kind of have global ambitions. Like, I personally am horrified by all the things that have happened in Ukraine, mm-hmm. and I would be the sort of person who, though I have real strong pacifist leanings, I think defending your home is morally absolutely appropriate with violence. And so, but how, if we're like you and I, as Americans, like you and I are outsiders on this, so how do we relate to it?
Yeah.
You know, and I think I'm not alone in thinking the overreaction in Palestine, Gaza, and Israel, like there was so much opportunity for something different. And I mean, my view, you are defending your homeland, but if your actions have killed 15,000 kids, you're on the wrong side of history, pal.
Yeah, you've skewed, like, you're painting yourself as a victim, yet how many children have you murdered? At some point, it's like, oh no, I don't know. You've gone kind of far afield of maybe your initial claim.
Yeah.
Oof, yeah, man, it's that's a whole conversation, but yeah.
But there, I mean, and maybe these are like showing the difference. If you are if you're a 19-year-old in Ukraine and you say, I want to sign up for the cause, that looks a certain way. And if you're in Israel and you're a 19-year-old and you say, I want to sign up for the cause, I feel like it's the execution of the leadership is very, very different in these two spheres, even though we're, you know, quote unquote, that country, we're the ones that were attacked. Right. And so like the trustworthiness of the institutions, that's what this show
and
is
even
about.
Over, I think it's over here too, more with the military, you know, yeah. Because in a sense, you know, the different branches of the military go to high schools and find sort of kids that maybe didn't thrive academically and aren't going off to be lawyers or doctors or whatever. And it's like, hey, you guy who feels outside and whatever, this is the thing that you should invest all your time in. And to a degree, there is a sort of coming in and taking a young person like the Jedi that is happening there. And then it's sort of indoctrinating them to think, because it's not my homeland was attacked and I want to go join up. It's we're not really being attacked, but would you like to go prevent other people from being attacked and show these people the right way to live their lives? It's so much the American military complex where I'm like, no, man, we shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be doing that. That way's death, you know? Like,
well, I assume that the military is spending a ton on their advertising budget. And it's for, I mean, I'm sure they have a wide net, so it's trying to find anybody to draw you in. This, I mean, to circle back, I think this is going to be part of Chimere's story. Chimere, the very first thing he says to Saul, when Saul says, who are you? Is he says, you, don't you remember me? Like, you are an important person in my life. and you don't recognize me. You have dismissed me. That is some depthy animosity that's going to come out of that guy, you know? And so I may have said this in the past. My whole family is military. Mm-hmm. My uncle had a terrible experience in Vietnam and has become the sort of person who is very suspicious, very, can go down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole, and certainly loves the Russian propaganda being thrown out that is anti-American institutions, and will send me stuff all the time.
Jeez.
And like I have in conversation with him, I'm always trying to balance because I'm slightly idealistic about American, you know, goodness still. And so like the sorts of conversations we have end up being really tricky on this front because I want to honor his experience. I want to honor the severe things suffered. If I had killed 5 men for the sake of my country and then in a situation like Vietnam and then came back and said, I don't know that was the best decision. That would be really hard.
I cannot fathom living with that, honestly. Like,
I've said this before. I've had students who came up to me after classes who ended up having to take down very young people in Iraq who had explosives and like just crushing guilt on that front. But what do you, their question to me was, what do you do in this situation? And you're like, man, everybody is stepping into a hornet's nest.
Let me order you another drink. That's what I'll do.
Yes.
I think I wanted. I had a thought watching it, and then as you said it too, this moment of Sol asking Chimere who you are, and he says you don't remember me. And I think there also is thinking of Sol as a teacher for a moment, and not just a Jedi Knight.
Yeah.
Thinking of him as a teacher. Yeah. I think that's, to me, that felt devastating on that on that level. I'm certainly not a teacher to the degree that you have been or other people I know have been, but I've been teaching a little bit over the last year, just some mm-hmm. intro to theater classes. Mm-hmm. And there is such a thing where there's always 4 or 5 students we sort of pre-select, kind of going, these are going to be the ones that do a really good job, I think, and these are the ones I'm going to put all my focus in. And then there's other kids mm-hmm. who maybe are just as talented who don't get paid attention to, who that affects. I saw some, I might be reading into that, but I saw a decent amount of that in there too. I don't know if that's going to be the case if he was around and he was a student too, but I saw that I was around. You don't remember me, do you? Yeah, sure you don't, because that's the kind of person you are. That's how that hit me. And again, I could totally be wrong, but that felt heavy.
Yeah.
But done very well.
My assumption is exactly that they're, you know, my assumption is Chimere was on that, that action that was on May and Ashoa's world. My assumption is that Chimere was part of that crew and they just haven't shown him yet mm-hmm. and they will. And he was involved in that explosion and his heart turned hard after the explosion. I bet you that, I bet you Saul had intentionally as part of that explosion that it looks like it's May, but it's really Saul is mm-hmm. part of that. And it ended up hitting Chimere. It looked like he was burned.
Yeah.
And so if Chimere's left for dead on that planet and May is the only survivor, I mean, that there's your pairing. You know, Chimere has Jedi training. He turns, he thinks, you know, he has a now very negative view of the Jedi and he takes May and says, let's go get revenge.
Yeah.
Predictable, but I think it's a great story to tell. I think they've set up all the pieces just fine.
Well, not every story needs to blow your mind. My God, Bruce Willis was dead the entire time. Holy shit. Like those are great stories and I love that. But you can watch The Sixth Sense once.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah, this is exactly right. The great stories we come back to because we the emotional arcs of the characters are really compelling to us and we can review them. I loved the line. This is now just kind of jumping forward. Jakia has died. Yord has died, and we're now the confrontation between Saul and Chimer is going to be severe. And I love the bringing in the line. You carry a Jedi weapon, but you are no Jedi. I thought it was clunky when they did it in Ahsoka. There were no Jedi, but I thought that was a really tastefully done use of that line of "You're no Jedi."
Yeah.
Anyway, and he responds, "I have no name, but the Jedi, like you,
yeah,
might call me Sith." I like this on a handful of fronts. We've already kind of said it. It's one, you can't categorize me. You would call me this, but that's because you're ignorant and you don't understand things and the variety of things. And also, he's also saying, I'm not on your team.
Yeah, I'm playing this game, but I'm not on the team.
He begins talking about the rules, and there's a lot actually in this episode about the rules. Yord says to Ashoa, I don't want to have to subdue you, but I will. Because he has to follow orders. And the rules and orders become kind of big here.
Which also means you do. Like, I don't want to, but I will. Which means you do want to, because you know that's... And you're fully prepared to do it. So,
We've already brought up the idea of a company man. Yord following the rules leads to... No, actually, because Yord doesn't follow the rules, does she break away? Does she convince him to go back into the fight? That's how that worked, didn't it? Didn't Ashoa convince Yord to go back into the fight, and so he didn't follow the rules and ends up dying?
I don't know if she convinced him as much as she just did it, and he had to chase after her. But yes,
yeah. This becomes, there's something primary in Chimer's language where he says, "I don't make the rules; the Jedi do," and the Jedi say, "I can't exist." We talked about this last time in terms of the variety of religious experience in this galaxy is going to be wide, but the Jedi find themselves in a spot where they feel like they can be dominant and their tradition ought to be dominant. And, you know, they're putting the 10 Jedi commandments on the wall and saying, this is how it is, kids. And to hell with your tradition.
Yeah. Did you see, just to say, I mean, there isn't, you can cut this if you need to, and you probably should, but there was a post I saw online with that 10 Commandments thing where it's like, I'm so glad the 10 Commandments are back up in the walls in elementary school, because I'm pretty sure my fifth grader was going to commit adultery and I needed them to know that was bad.
I like that. Yeah, I feel like folks like don't even know what, like, so I as many listeners know, I worked in ministry for 15 years. Like, having on the wall, "You shall have no other God besides me," at the top of the list is probably, I mean, that feels like you should probably not go down that road in terms of what we collectively.
But also, this is an elementary school.
I mean, I think like they want, it's the legalism. It's the enforcement of, if only we had law and order, then everything would be great. While at the same time, all of our, you know, the people who are most dastardly at committing fraud, sexual abuse, and, you know, generally disparaging the rule of law.
Who are claiming to be the law and order people?
At the top of the ticket. Just, it's so... makes me want to pick up a lightsaber and hack some folks to bits.
Yeah.
I think that's where Chimer lands.
Yeah.
Later, there's the dialogue between Chimer and Saul. Why risk discovery? He says, well, I did wear a mask.
That really made me laugh. I thought that was a good line.
It was a good line. Says he wants freedom. The freedom to wield my power the way I like without having to answer to Jedi like you. I want a pupil. I want an acolyte. There is a religious freedom line throughout this whole show, from the Dathomirian to Chimer here. And to say, I don't, like, again, you're leveraging your religious tradition, gaining power. It's a nationalistic move. I mean, I don't know how else to... That is what's going on.
Yeah,
here,
I think so. It's the, it feels very, I'm going to say I'm a libertarian and say I just want to do what I want to do and have nobody bother me, but then also I want to punish you all for doing this thing and because you're not doing it the right way. It's like, then you're not a libertarian, friend, but okay. It feels like that right. to me from him. Now, there's some hypocrisy
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Or some irony, maybe. I don't know. I might be using the word irony in an Alanis Morissette sense in this situation, but it feels like that to me.
Yeah, it's I'm building up very spiky walls and saying, get the hell yeah. off my lawn, you know, kind of.
But then also going onto your lawn. It's like, dude. But he's, like,
yeah. Or, well, there's the vengeance. Vengeance at some levels can be if you hit me, I'm going right. to hit you as hard as I possibly can so right. you never hit
Locker
me again.
Room justice, that kind of thing.
Going on. Yeah, right? Yeah, and then these. Obviously, they have to. This is so often the case with these sorts of serialized properties. You have to get the good guy and bad guy to have a confrontation, have a dialogue, and then, but not kill each right. other. And right. so, we'll bring in the flying moths or what roly polies.
Yeah, no, thank you.
To take him away, and you know it's the same thing with like the cavern that breaks between Kylo Ren and Rey, kind of thing. It's like okay. Oh, till next time, Spider-Man.
Tune in next week.
That's right. So, and I'm all for serialized.
I love TV, like man. I really that sounds like such a, like okay, but it is like it just I like TV because there is that element of it. A movie, you get the whole story, but I love that. I like that TV. You can take more time. Gives you something to look forward to.
Yeah,
and I know there are people, yep. and I know at times I get really impatient as a consumer. We're all consumers, but as somebody who at times I can really like lean into that consumer mentality of like spend a whole day binge watching an entire series and being like, what else you got? But I do like
right.
that they are making us wait a week for these because it does create the thing I really miss about regular television. Back in the day, if I don't know the age demographic of who listens to this show, maybe you don't remember that at all. But I do love the idea that you got it once a week, man, and you waited for it, and people were excited about it, and there was that like, whoa, I haven't seen it yet. Don't talk to me.
Yep.
Then you get to communicate about it like secret code. Like, are you watching the? Yeah. Oh, did you see the? Oh, you know that kind of fun, club shit. Like I love that.
Agreed. Last word here, I think on what they need, and I'm actually going to side slightly with some of the critics on the fact that I think they need a great Jedi character who is representing the tradition well and in a praiseworthy fashion. I don't think Saul's going to be able to be that character, which is fine. I think they need somebody in there, and this may be, I've already forgotten her name, but the green woman, who apparently is a hero in some books.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything. We said this last week or last time. I really don't know anything about this time period, mm-hmm. so I don't know who that is. But cool. If she is that, rock and roll.
Right.
And I do wonder if it's somebody we may meet towards the end, you know, if indeed the plan, which it sounds like at least the yeah. creator and showrunner is thinking that it is multiple seasons, we might meet that person in episode 8.
Yeah. They might set them up, or it could be very much Game of Thrones kind of did this, where it's like you wrap up the story that you've told with the characters that you have for a season, and then like at the beginning of your next season.
Right.
Okay, let's bring a bunch of new chess pieces onto the board. We killed off all these chess pieces in the last season, so we need some replacements, which is great.
And my favorite thing about this show is because of the time period, it's not going to be a heinously de-aged Mark Hamill.
Right. It's going to be a youthfully invigorated Yoda.
Right, yeah. I forgot that is the thing that people are also angry about. Like, where's Yoda? I'm like, you know, the president doesn't show up for a parking ticket.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We will. They may get there, but there. I like that they not all the stakes have to be galactic. Dark Knight does this. I mean, it's the stakes are
right
for the most part smaller. It's this city and the health of this city. It doesn't have to be the case that you're saving the world every single time.
Yeah, no. It doesn't have to be Justice League level stuff. Sometimes Batman shows up because right. somebody's getting robbed on a subway platform.
Right.
And ends up beating the shit out of those people in one of the most brutal ways you've ever seen. It's like, whoa, they're just taking that guy's wallet. Maybe don't.
I'm all for that.
Me too,
Batman.
Me too. I adored that one.
Batman to Galactic Justice League hanging out in a satellite watching the
Earth watching
Batman.
Everybody else who can go into space because Batman can't.
Great. Bing, well, anything else about this episode?
Yeah, no, just everything we've said. I thought this episode was really, really great. And it is such a great companion piece for 4, because 4 by itself did leave me disappointed, but just left me thinking I could have used more. Great 4 and 5. If you're listening to this and you have not jumped into the show yet, well, I guess you don't need to watch it now because we've told you exactly what happens. However, if you would like to see the visual companion piece to this podcast, watch them together.
Yeah. Bing, my last thoughts is I think they're doing a great job, as we kind of said, setting up a show that's going to have multiple seasons. And I think most Star Wars fans, or at least I haven't heard anyone just say, this is what we're doing. We're building, you know, a hub for this point in time. And we're going to tell stories, Star Wars stories from this point in time with some principal characters who are being established,
yeah,
which is great. I don't think Saul makes it out of this season as a prediction. No. I don't think that Ashoa fails to remain idealistic and bright-eyed. I think there's going to be some dark turns.
And
I really hope.
Is it just to say, Amandala Steenberg, she's awesome. She's so great. She's playing two characters.
Yep.
And they are so noticeably different to watch. I think she's doing a killer job, and I'm just excited. I hope they, my actual last word, piggybacking off that, is I just hope they open it up and let her really kick some ass.
Yeah, agree. I really hope they bring in the Dathomirians again. And if they do, there's going to be some room if they want it for Zabrakis.
Yeah.
The Darth Maul style characters, which I think win. You know, the Ventress, Darth Maul, those guys, when they're in Star Wars universe, always, yeah, they just do cool stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
And I like that they have shown you how powerful Mei is, and if she gets converted into the Jedi way, what you're going to have is kind of a Luke situation where she's older, converts, and is now learning. I will love to watch them train Mei up as a Jedi, and we get to be part of that process. You know, you don't get to see that very often. We got to see that with Rey, I suppose. We got to see it with Luke. I suppose we get to see it in part with Anakin. But
also like briefly, though, because all three of those people, Anakin, Luke, Rey, begin training and then have to go off because there's sort of bigger things happening where it's like, okay, push pause on this. Now we're going to go over here. So to really see the mystical world of Jedi training, I would be fascinated by.
Yep. Agreed. This is another reason that Saul needs to die. Saul needs to probably do something that releases Mei into being healthy. Like, I can see Saul dying for the sake of Mei and then Mei's heart being changed, something like that.
Yeah, it needs to be. I mean, it'll be what it'll be, and I'm sure it'll be great. It needs to be. But like a self-sacrificial or that type of Obi-Wan Kenobi laying down his life for Luke et al. When they're trying to leave the Death Star, something like that.
Yep. In fact, well, I guess he can't Force Ghost. They don't discover. I think Qui-Gon's the first one that discovers Force Ghost.
Oh.
And so I don't think Saul could come back and speak. But long story short, that whatever the transition looks like, you know, I could, you know, and then Mei would have lots of, I want to see my sister pulled back.
Yeah.
Going on. And she will, Mei would have a real insight. One of the things they've set up, and I don't know that I've heard anyone talk about it, is that Mei doesn't trust Chimaer. She understands that at some level he's a slave, you know, like all Sith, he is a slave master, and that she's been doing, the bidding of somebody who's not very good.
Well, and that's why I think I'm wondering if there's some ulterior motive, some of her using him to get what she wants to kind of go along, to get along, that kind of... Because when she thinks he's gone, there is a pivot there in her behavior. You see her making some decisions and planning some things. Again, I could totally be wrong, but that's how it felt to me, where it's like, man, there is a, okay, now here we go attitude. Like when she, the whole conversation between her and Ray, where it's like, don't disappoint me again. Listen to me. Remember, you got to trust me. It's like, whoa, shit, there's something there. And I loved it. And she performed it so well.
Agreed. Last thing for me, May has rejected using a lightsaber. Isn't that right?
Seems like it.
I feel like that's a plant for when she finally picks up a blade, it will be
right, she'll be wrecking some serious shop.
But if, or even that's going to be the sign that her heart has changed in some way. But right now she's doing that Matrix style, here are my, you know, Gambit kind of blades. That's who she strikes me as. It's not so good. She's like a Gambit kind
of, like from the X-Men
Gambit character. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if like he's routinely throwing, you know, those cards that are empowered. It feels like whenever she's throwing stuff, that's what I see in my mind.
Hell yeah.
It's like how but I think I got the sense that she had rejected lightsabers, and therefore if there's, you know, if you want to visually show the turn of someone's heart, it might be of that sort. So
anyway, love it.
That's what I got. Bing. Well, if you get into Star Wars and you want to check out our work, we obviously did a bunch of work on the Clone Wars, the first half of the Clone Wars, and you can see that with the rest of the Star Wars binge. And we plan, I suppose, to continue. When good properties emerge, when Star Wars on film is worth talking about, we'll be posting in the future. So I imagine you and I will probably wrap this sucker up and look towards the future. I don't know what else they... Do they have anything else coming down the pipe that we know of? I guess Andor is coming
up. Jude Law and the Child Pirates, I believe, comes out.
Oh, there you go.
What the hell is that one actually called? I can't
remember. It's Skeleton Crew.
Skeleton Crew, thank God. I can't remember what it's actually called. Yeah. Jude Law and the Child Pirates is also the name of my garage band that that performs at HQ on South Broadway.
That's exactly right. So if these are worthwhile, I assume that at the very least you and I will be talking about Andor when it comes back.
Yeah, man, season two. Did you see the big announcement earlier in the week that some more familiar faces from Rogue One might be popping up in this series?
I mean, they got to bring in some K2SO for sure, and I'm all for it. Like, this is I'm ridiculously excited to see how they land this or move it through, because they don't need to land the plane. They've already landed the plane with Rogue One, and they did a great job.
Need to get
it's
us
really
there.
Those bridge.
Yeah,
yeah. So tell a really interesting dark bridge story.
So far, they're doing so. Yeah.
And I suppose if they return to Star Wars animation again, it's worth talking about. I thought The Bad Batch was good, not great. Beautiful. And I continue to think that their Tales of the Jedi, Tales of the Sith, also beautiful.
Yeah.
They're missing, I mean, it would take a while, but I think there's more to do there. It's not Clone Wars quality, it's not Rebels quality, but it's still, like, the animation is really great. Well, that's what I got. I guess this is Daniel Mothershed.
Of course.
Thank you. You are no Jedi. And I'm Jeff Cook. And I'm sure there's something clever here with... Why are you hiding your face from your pupils?
You have done this whole podcast wearing a mask. Can't confirm.
Right.
Jeff, no one can see you take off the mask.
Realized it. You know why I wear the mask, Daniel?
We were burned by acid or something? No, wrong property. Because this is the way.
Because this is the way.
We were burned by acid or something? Damn, what I should have said was because they're terribly fashionable, and I think in the future everybody will be wearing them. I just wasn't fast enough.
That's a hard pull right
there.
That's
only in retrospect, you think. God damn it.
You have to be in the lore.